Good morning. We're with the Fisher Body Oral History team. We're at the greenhouse today, and we're going to interview. Would you please state your name for the record and spell your last name?
Donald Perry, P-E-R-R-Y.
And today is Friday, the 27th of January at 10 o'clock. Mr. Perry, what's your address?
1530 Waverly Road, Holt, Michigan.
Your marital status?
Single.
Do you have any children?
No.
Where were you born, sir?
Lansing, Michigan.
Your education?
Completed high school, some college.
Military experience?
4 years, United States Air Force.
Okay, I'm going to go around the room and introduce all our people that will be helping interview today. Could we please start here?
Jerry Smith.
Cheryl McCoy.
Marilyn Coulter.
John Fedor.
And I'm Michael Fleming. Don, when did you hire into Fisher Body?
Originally, it was the end of May of 1972. I worked 1 week. They laid me off. Was laid off a week. Called me back. Worked 93 days. They laid me off again. I went in the Air Force then.
Why did you hire into Fisher Body?
My parents were pushing me towards it. I had no desire to work in a factory. And they pushed me into it. And they had some friends that worked at Fisher Body that were foremen. And so I went over and filled out the application. Within 2 weeks, they called me to come in for a physical.
When you hired in, was it a pretty intimidating sight to walk into a factory of that size?
Yes, it was. I walked out and I was just in awe of how big it was, and I didn't know where to go. I got lost a couple times.
So when you went in, what was the first thing that you did as far as employment?
First job, they brought me in on second shift. I worked with the guy on the cardboard baler, and that was for one night. And the next night, I went to third shift in the booth cleaners.
So you went right from a production into booth cleaning?
I went right off the street into booth cleaning.
Okay, right off the street into booth cleaning. Talk about what a booth cleaner does, please.
Booth cleaner maintains the booths after production goes down. We go in and clean the floors, clean the paint hoses, walls, whatever might need clean from the paint, getting it off them, and get it ready for the next day shift to come in. Then on weekends, we clean the pits, dig those out, whatever, and keep those flowing good.
Was booth cleaning considered a desirable job or non-desirable?
A lot of people thought it was desirable because it was third shift, and they figured, you know, they could come in, possibly take a nap, whatever. But once they got in there actually doing the work, they realized how hard it was, and a lot of them didn't care for it then.
What is your present job?
When I left Fisher Body, when they closed it down, I was a maintenance oiler.
Okay, so you left booth cleaning.
Yeah, I was laid off that, and my group filtered down into oilers for seniority purposes, or leveled off into oilers, I should say.
Let's go back to when you hired in. How old were you when you
hired 19. Excuse me, 18.
Was that something that you regret at this point? Is something that you're proud of, the fact that you hired in at 18 and it worked out well for you?
Yeah, it seemed to work out really good. Then I really didn't want it. I fought my parents tooth and nail. But I thank them every day now that I did do it. Everything, because the time after I was laid off, went in service, that's when the early 70s oil embargo came. A lot of people lost their jobs and got laid off, lost seniority, and mine kept going from being on military leave.
Which branch of the service again?
Air Force.
Air Force. Did you get any special skills while you were in the Air
Force? I trained as an aircraft electrician and everything, and I pursued skill trades when I got out, but they weren't hiring at the time, so I never pursued it any further. I was happy where I was at.
Sounds like an interesting trip. When you returned back to the plant after your layoff, you were still a booth cleaner?
Yeah, they took me right into booth cleaning. It was right before changeover, so they needed the people, so they took me right into booth cleaning.
And what's changeover? Let's talk about that.
That is where they do the model change, and back then it was anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks, depending on the year. And that's when maintenance did a thorough cleaning and everything, and they did retooling, whatever might be needed done for the new model run for the next year. In my particular job, we did thorough cleanings of the paint booths and arc booths, the welding booths, whatever.
Talk about how long, at that time, a changeover would take versus the later years, and how long the length of time changeovers were taking.
Then they averaged anywhere from, like, say, 6 to 8 weeks. But at one point, I believe it was in 78, when we moved up to the new paint department, we was off for almost 4 months. And today, they average anywhere from 2 to 3 hours.
A drastic change.
In
the way that we do business.
Yes, sir.
Would you say it's for the better, or do you think it's something that's not as a good changeover period?
In one aspect, I think it's for the better, but yet, too, I think it's not good because a lot of the maintaining of the equipment isn't getting done like it needs to be done.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Mr. Perry, you were third shift booth cleaner, and you did your deep cleaning during changeovers, so you worked all the changeovers.
Yeah, I had one changeover off in the 30-some years I've been there. We were working 7 days a week during the changeovers.
How much different was the deep cleaning compared to just the every night cleaning?
A lot, because you ended up climbing into the air ducts and the sides of the booths. You'd have to hand scrape the paint off them and everything, and dig out the pits more, get them with putty nice and scrape them out good.
And what is the size of a pit? I'm sure they must vary in size, but
the original ones when I hired in was about, they had them in stages. They were usually about 4 to 5 foot deep, anywhere from 4 to 5 foot square. But the ones they have now are like 25, 30 foot deep, probably 20, 30 foot square. And you actually had to go right down and stand in the sludge and stuff to start digging them out or washing down, whatever.
When you first hired in, and it's different.
Well, then, even now, I guess they do it differently, but back then you'd have to climb right in. That was one of the first instances I had of a memory was, I was 19, all gung-ho, I can jump in, start right doing it and everything. I sunk into the sludge up to my waist almost. Got my boots stuck. I had to get a guy on each arm and pull me right out to get me out.
Oh, man.
They were just laughing their butts off.
I bet.
But it was something they'd seen before.
Yeah, yeah. They knew what was coming and everything. They just let me do it.
It's kind of a prank.
Yeah. Oh. And everything. They had to dig my boots out of the sludge because they stayed in and I didn't, so...
So what kind of safety training did you get for that job?
Back then, they didn't have no safety training at all. It wasn't until the three booth cleaners got killed that they initiated the safety training process. And I was there in the plant the night that happened.
Can you talk to us about that?
I had just went into Euler Group about 3 months prior to that. And they had recalled me back to booth cleaning. I turned them down. And I was in body shop doing my job, and I had my radio on. I heard the foreman that passed away, the call on the radio that he needed help. So I took off and went up there, and when I got up there, they had them all three out of the pit laying on the floor doing CPR and whatnot on them. And I just stood around. That's all we could do because the EMS crew was there by then. And we just stood around, watched, and then they took them all out on a gurney, and probably an hour later, we had been told they had all passed away.
So, while you were watching that, did you ever think, my goodness, I've been working down there?
Actually, that came across my mind first thing, because the last time that pit they died in was clean. Myself and the foreman that died had been the ones to clean it. And it just freaked me right out. Because if I'd have went back into booth clean, I'd have been the one there doing it with them.
Before that happened, did you ever think that... Were there ever any fumes that you were curious about, or...?
Just your normal paint fumes, like you paint in your house and stuff. And we never gave it any thought. We just got in, did the job, and got out. And never thought twice about it and stuff. And from what I was told, what happened that night is they had shut the circulation pumps off and paint had crusted over. And the fumes had built up in it, and one of them stepped into it, and the fumes come up and knocked them out, and then they drowned into the sludge. Then the foreman, he had seen it, he yelled at him down to get help, and he went down and helped him out, and he got overcome by the fumes too and passed out.
So you knew all these gentlemen?
Yeah, they were all good friends. Dick Clay is the first one that passed away. He was one of the first people I worked with when I was in booth cleaning. And Bob Ward, the foreman, he was my foreman when I was in it, booth cleaners. And Roger Tackett, the third one, he was a supplementer that come in for changeover to help him. He was a production person that supplemented in for changeover to help. And I bowled with him, so he was a good friend too.
So you, at this point, you were an oiler, though?
Yeah, I was an oiler for about three, four months at the time that happened. It was a rough go of it. It was a hard time on everybody.
Mike Fleming, Don. Throughout all this, end result after that tragic accident, was there any safety training that they implemented that you know of? Or this is called confined spaces, if I'm not correct. Did they do anything to help bring awareness about that?
After OSHA came in and investigated it, they set up a policy for training everybody for confined space and safety equipment to wear and all that when you go in a pit and everything. And even on my oiler job, I had to have the training for it because there was other areas we went in the plant for greasing our equipment that we had to get in pits and whatnot. So everybody in the plant, skill trades, maintenance, everybody was then started getting trained on safety, confined space entry and whatnot.
Don, have you ever heard the term indirect labor? Or a group of individuals that are not directly tied to working on the automobile?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been referred to as that as an oiler.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about that? What is your take on that as far as the value that you add to the product and how it makes you feel to hear someone think that you're not...
Well, we've been called bottom of the barrel, low man on the totem pole, all such a different terminology, but I figure the job I do was needed to keep the equipment running or to keep the boost clean. Otherwise, production wouldn't be able to run because everything would be building up and everything. I just took it in stride. I just figured I was one of the lucky ones that had a supposed easy job, as some of them thought it, and everything. But one, like, again, once they got in and seen what I actually did do, they didn't want no part of it. So I felt lucky because that's pretty much my own boss. I could come and go as I wished. If I needed a break, I'd take it and everything. So I felt fortunate to be in the department I was in.
The booth cleaners themselves, you see a lot of high seniority people come into that group. And like you say, once they realize what they really have to do, they get out as fast as they can. Is that something that you've seen?
Yeah, a lot of them do. But a lot of them were farmers too, so they come in and hopefully be able to take a nap so they could get up and do their job and then go home and plow their fields or whatever too.
So it was
a lot of reason that a lot of them come in.
It was a job of convenience for some.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Did you, when you came in, we'll go back to when you came in. Let's just talk about the oiler job. Who broke you in as an oiler? What happened?
I got reduced out of booth cleaning, and I leveled off into oilers. And the guy that broke me in was named Ken Spiegel. He was about 5 years lower seniority than I was. And he brought me in along with his partner he was working with at the time and showed me the gist of the job for about a week. And then me and his old partner, Joe Garza, was on our own. And back then, there was four of us on third shift, and two of us each had a line. And I did what they called A line back then, which is C body shop now. And we started in the body shop, went through paint and trim, did it all. Over a month period of time, they break it off into certain jobs, certain days, and we greased it all. But as the time went by, they got more oilers in the group, and we was all put into a certain department to cover that specific area.
Well, let's talk about you. Now you're using grease guns and oil cans and all types of things to keep machinery lubricated. What else did you do with those things? Was there any type of initiation into that group? Was there anything that you all did for fun to one another or someone that didn't know any better? Talk about some of those things that possibly could have happened.
Well, one instance that happened to me is we had a pump that we was pumping oil in, a bottle, an air bottle they called it, for a cylinder. And I was using the pump and the hose blew, and I got oil sprayed all over me, and people kind of laughed about that. But as far as us doing fun things to other ones, we pretty much didn't do that in our group because it could be hazardous at times with different chemicals and whatnot. We used the oils and hydraulic oil, different types of greases we had to use and stuff. So we was pretty diligent on that, pulling pranks on other ones like that with that stuff.
Okay. So now you talked about hydraulics. Now hydraulics some of them are heated.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the one that happened, had you seen anybody else have a hydraulic incident that was probably not a very good thing to see, I'm sure.
Personally, I've never seen one happen, but a friend of mine told me about one this morning, in fact, where a line busted and sprayed a guy in it. Crystallized his shirt. Yeah, it was hot hydraulic, and when it hit him, he said he had to rip his shirt off and run to the hospital. But she said it crystallized his shirt. She was telling me that this morning at the Jobs Bank office.
How much pressure are some of those lines under about? You have any idea?
Oh, some of them, depending on what they were operating, could be up to 100 PSI, pounds per square inch.
That's quite a bit of pressure, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Cheryl McQuaid, I'm just amazed that you hired in right to the third shift.
That was a rarity to have that happen, right into maintenance off of street.
I worked day shift, I worked second shift. I never spent any time on third shift. And it's got to be so much different than the day shift and the second shift. Could you tell me a little bit about what's going on in the plant on second shift? Do you see any animals?
Yeah, one area we went to over in building 22 where the trash compactors and stuff were. We went in there one night to fill up the hydraulics, and I looked down, there's like a foot and a half rat down in the pit. And let me tell you, I left that place right now. And we've seen raccoons in the plant. We have stray cats that come in. They come in looking for food and whatnot. And possums now and then. Everything. But we had a deer come in one night, I believe. I heard about it, but I didn't see it. They said there was a deer in there one night. But we had all kinds of weird events going on during the night.
Marilyn Coulter, what time did your shift start?
When I first started in, it was 11 to 7:30. Then a few years down the road, they switched to 10 to 6:30 a.m. And it went different times, just whatever the need might be. And then weekends, a lot of times, they bring us in at second shift, 3 to 11:30.
So now, when you started 11, you know, the line was still running. What did you do prior to...
Well, that was the shock to me when I first hired in, because I'd come in and go see the boss and everything, and then everybody disappeared, and I had no idea where they were. I just sat there by the old glaze booth then, and sat there for 3 hours, not knowing what to do, where to go, or anything. And then all of a sudden, everybody would reappear and everything. I said, wait a minute, something ain't right. So they finally got me in the groove of it and told me that that's when they go take their naps or whatever. Uh-huh. And everything. They all had a little specific area they went and hid in and stuff. So I got to where I'd nap now and then, but not often. I'd go out and started meeting people and talking to them and exploring the plant and finding, you know, seeing different areas of what they do and how they build the cars and everything.
Now, given the fact that you came into that department right off the street, and that was an odd thing to happen, that normally did not happen?
Back then it was, yes, because normally they brought you in right to production.
But that being the case, how did the fellas treat you knowing you came right in off the street into what was considered, even though it was a nasty job, it was a preferred job?
Most of them were pretty supportive of me. We had a few that kind of gave me the cold shoulder at first, but they got over it eventually and everything. I got more flack mostly from production people at the time. You know, how'd you get so lucky to hire right in off the street into something like that?
I just want to take you back a little bit, actually quite a bit. You said that your parents had you come in here. If you were in the community, I mean, did you know anything about the plant prior to coming in?
My father worked at Oldsmobile on what was now known as the chassis side. And he worked swing shift back then, like 6 weeks on day, 6 weeks on second, 6 weeks on third. And just by his attitude when he'd come home, how tired he was, grouchy sometimes, everything, I didn't want no part of it.
So that was just the way you didn't like the way it seemed like it made him?
Yeah.
The type of person it made him.
And as far as what they did in the factory and all that, I had no knowledge of that whatsoever.
All you thought was it made him a tired, grumpy person?
Yeah. They made cars. That's all I knew
about
it. And
that's all you knew. And so when you came into that.
Yeah. And then when I walked in and seen the process of it, even 34 years later, I'm still fascinated watching it progress, starting from pieces of metal into what they make.
So, being fascinated by that and then knowing the importance of what it is that you do, because you help the wheel to run, right?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Keeping it going. What was the sizes of the teams that you worked in?
Well, as in booth cleaners, there was probably back in the beginning 40 to 50 people in the group. And we were in teams of like 4 to 5 per booth.
Now, were maintenance personnel, were they primarily all men or were there women in there?
Back then, they were strictly men. And the women didn't start coming into even skilled trades until probably mid-80s.
Okay. And now, are there women booth cleaners?
To my knowledge, there's still not no ladies or women in booth cleaning.
And are there any female oilers?
No.
Uh-huh. And do you think it's because it's... Why do you think that is?
Truthfully, I don't know if any woman's ever put in for the job or not, or if it's just some restriction they might have of not allowing women because of the type of work. Because there is a lot of climbing and digging and heavy lifting and whatnot involved in it, so I don't know if that plays part in it or what it might be.
Mm-hmm. Now, because you work with toxic chemicals and things like that, and do you guys have to take any kind of special physicals every now and then?
Yeah, they give us yearly physicals. We do the breath test and hearing test, all that good stuff, every year. Mm-hmm. And they check everything out. And they do chest x-rays and all that on you, make sure everything needs to be where it is.
Yeah.
So, okay. Don, you did mention the fact that you were laid off and went into the service. Have you ever been in a strike when the plant was on strike?
The first one we were on, I believe, was in the late 70s, early 80s. I was on body shop production then. We walked off the line at midnight, and we were back the next morning. Or day shift was back the next morning. Then probably 3 contracts ago, I believe, we went out locally for 3 days and then went back.
Okay, the supervisors, you mentioned that you pretty much supervised yourself and knew what you had to do. So did you have a good supervisor when you did have to interact?
Most of them overall, the worst ones I had was when I was on production, but maintenance supervisors were fantastic. Booth cleaners were really good, and then once I went into oilers, I hate to say it, but most of them didn't have no idea what we did. We had maintenance, skilled trade supervisors. So they just gave us our preventative maintenance sheets every month and said, you know what to do, go do it. So we went out and did our job and turned them in when we were done.
Jerry Smith.
Yeah, Don, you were saying that you've got 34 years, and do you plan on going out to the new plant?
Yes, right now I'm scheduled to go into material on third shift. And I plan on being there probably till I'm 55. And I plan on retiring.
Cheryl McQuaid, you mentioned when you first went into the oiler group, you would sit for about 3 hours.
Well, that was in booth cleaners.
Oh, with that booth cleaners? Because
yes.
You couldn't do anything while production was running?
No, not while production was running.
And you mentioned that the other people on your team would disappear.
Yeah.
And come to find out they were in little sleeping nooks. And
some were just out visiting, doing other things.
Where did they go to sleep at?
Different areas. Some went on top of the booths, some went in on top of the fake ceilings, false ceilings, I believe they called them. Some just went in a corner and found a chair and sat in, nodded out, just wherever they could find a spot.
Don, there's a lot of activities that go on around the plant. One of them was they always had high school football games. Did you ever get a chance to watch any of those football games, or do you know any folks that went up and watched those?
Yeah, I must confess I did a couple times, went up on the roof and watched them.
So, excuse me, explain it. I don't know if we heard that or not. You went where to watch them, and explain about that a little bit.
Well, at one point they had the big double doors when they built the new paint department open. We could sit there and watch them, but other times I went up on top of the roof and watched them for 15, 20 minutes, see who was winning.
Were there other people there?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of production people, trades people. Production people come up on their breaks and check them out, and then trades people come up every now and then and watch them.
Did they have popcorn and pop and stuff?
Not unless you brought it yourself.
Okay.
Even so, caught a couple foremans up there one day watching them.
Did you? That was a pretty good deal that they go up. I mean, it's a great vantage point. For
yes, it is.
See it.
The bird's eye view of it.
Yeah. Any other things that you know of that went on in there that only the what we would call indirect labor folks would know about and production people didn't? Were there things that went on inside there that we didn't know anything about?
About the only thing I'm aware of is the areas that production people weren't aware were in the plant, because I could take people out there and get them lost under the ovens or out on the catwalks, whatever, and it'd be hard for them to find their way back.
Okay, all right.
Because there's a lot of areas where the conveyors went that they had no idea were there. Mm-hmm. Everything. But as far as any activity type stuff, I can't recall any that they might have that the production people weren't aware of.
Well, did the oilers combine with any other group, or did they stay to themselves when it came to having dinners, celebrations of birthdays, of holidays, be it Christmas or Easter?
Normally, we on third shift, we got with the tradespeople and had just one big dinner or whatever.
Talk about those dinners when you first came in until the time you got ready to leave. Did they get better? Did they get worse? Were there more people involved at a certain point?
Actually, I believe they got better, because when I first hired in, I don't recall in them ever having them. And once we moved up into the new paint department and stuff, I noticed they started having them more. And a few times I actually set them up myself. They put me in charge of them and everything. So they actually got better over time.
So if you were coordinating the dinners, what types of dinners did you coordinate?
We had birthday dinners. One trades guy. excuse me. one guy turned 50, so we threw him a surprise birthday party, and we usually had everybody bring in a dish to pass, and then we would everybody chip in a certain amount of money for the meat, have ham or turkey, whatever. And it turned out pretty good.
Okay. How about benefits? Like for someone that might have had a house fire, someone that might have had someone sick in their family. How about, do you have any of those where people collected money to help anybody?
Yeah, one instance was Mike Quinteri was an electrician in Underbody. He got injured at work and was pretty bad. He had his ear just about ripped off and some other injuries. And myself and Carl May, another oiler, and John Anthony, the benefits rep, we got together and set up a benefit dinner for him. Had hot dogs and potato salad, that type of thing. We ended up raising, between the three dinners we threw, about $6,000 for him.
Excellent.
And we took it over and gave him. He was in tears when he seen it.
Here's the thing. Did you? That was something that was pretty common in there, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Would you say that was part of the culture of Fisher Body, the way that the family felt of each other in there, or they thought each other of each other as a family?
Yeah, I really do, because it was like walking in and having a second family, because everybody would watch out for everybody. If you needed help on your job, someone could, they'd run over to help you. And like, say, if someone got injured, it was like the whole plant was there to back them up and support them through their recovery.
Maryland culture. Mike, you said, excuse me, Don, you said that Mike
Quinteri
had his ear ripped off. Did this happen at home? Did it happen in the plant?
It happened in C. Underbody. He, one of the presses they had done went and broke down. He went up above it to see what the problem was. And from my understanding, he reached in with a stick to hit a switch to trigger it to go again. And the stick got caught into something and pulled him right into the press. And pulled him down and threw him back out onto the catwalk when it come up. And it ripped his ear off. It was still hanging on, but it ripped it partially off. And did some other injuries. He broke his jaw, I believe, and had some other injuries. But one of the production people below the catwalk heard someone, heard a noise. And looked up, and blood was dripping down onto the floor by his workstation. And that's when they got EMTs out there and rushed him down to medical and took him to St. Lawrence Hospital. And we went up and seen him afterwards, and he was in critical condition then, but he recovered from it very well.
Mike Fleming, Don, what's an EMT?
Emergency medical technician.
We have those throughout the plant, do we?
Then we didn't. It was back then. It was mostly plant security and whatever foreman or maintenance person might be around at the time. But then they formed the ERT group, which is emergency response team, and they go on all emergency calls now.
Maryland culture. Now, is that team made up of? Who's that team made up of, or do you know?
They have production people, maintenance people, foremans, security guards, whoever wants to volunteer and go through the training for it.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl McCoy, you mentioned that for the benefit dinner for Mike Quinteri, you raised like $6,000. That's quite the benefit dinner. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you were able to raise that much money?
Yeah, originally when we first started to do it, there were several of us that planned it, and we had it up in paint department. And we, John Anthony got some Polish dogs, hot dogs, whatnot, donated, and then we had people donate different dishes to pass. And we took donations for it, and I believe that time we raised about $2,500 at that particular dinner. And then we got wind that the body shop people were upset because we had it in paint, because Mike worked in body shop. So we organized another one for body shop. And I believe on that one we raised another $1,500 to $2,000. And then trim people were upset because we were so far away from them. So we ended up organizing another one for trim department and raised another couple thousand for that.
That's
And we put it all, pulled it all together and took it over to him at home. And him and his wife just busted out in tears. They were so shocked by it. But that, to me, that's part of what GM people are all about. When someone's down and out, we all get together and help them out.
Cheryl McQuaid still, I'm sorry. You you touched on the environmental conditions of the third shift. And I guess I'd like you to, I never worked third shift. Third shift, whenever I went in there and the lights were off, the place was extremely eerie to me. And I guess I'd like to know what it was like hiring right in on the third shift, and I'm sure you were able to get used to it, but it's still a different than anything else that any of us have experienced. If you could tell us a little bit more about that shift.
Yeah, when I first hired in, the setup of the plant was totally different than what it is now, but when production went home, it got really quiet, and nobody around, and then all of a sudden, the workers appear. But back then, I was real nervous about venturing out too far, so I pretty much stayed in my area. But as the time went over, I started venturing out more and everything, and got to know the place. And once production went home, about all you heard was air leaks and fans going, or the heater kicking on, whatever. And it was real eerie at first, hearing all these strange noises you aren't used to. Everything, I'd always jump around, look, see what was behind me or something. But you grow to get used to it and everything, and then when you don't hear it, you say, no, something's wrong, because it's supposed to be a noise there, and it's not. So you start looking for trouble problems or something to correct.
Mike Fleming, Don. When you... you got 34 years in here, and there's been an awful lot of name changes over there, like BOC, LCA, and I don't know what else has been changed to. What do you think about the name changes that were in the plant?
Well, when I hired in, it was called Fisher Body, and as you say, it changed from that. After about 10 years, it went to BOC, which was Buick Dulles Cadillac. And then from that, I went to LCA, which was Lansing Car Assembly. And to me, with all the name changes, it's still Fisher Body. It always will be, even once they tear the building down, it's still going to be Fisher Body in my memories.
Oh, Miracle, I just wanted to go right back for a second to the building. Was there ever a time in there, I know we had power outages and things like that, were you ever in the building during those? And
There's a couple times we were there when the power went out, but the most significant power outage was when they had the East Coast power grid go down. I wasn't there when it happened, but we got called into work that night. And at the gate, they gave us flashlights to use to see our way through, and we got in there, and it was dead silent, nothing, no lights, no air, anything, and that was real eerie and stuff. And we made our way into get into our coveralls, and we went down to the maintenance office, and they guided us out to the parking lot by the powerhouse, and we sat there for pretty much the whole night. Because they thought they'd be getting power back. They didn't realize how significant of a power outage it was. And we stayed there the whole night out in the parking lot. Thank goodness it was summer. And went home the next morning. The second night, they told us to come back in. We went in. Same thing. Went and sat out in the parking lot. Other than thing different, we didn't change into our work clothes. Just went out and sat out in the parking lot. And then third night, we come in. They let us go home finally at lunch. I believe the day after that's when the power come back on.
But now, speaking of lunch, third shift, how did you have your lunch and your breaks? I mean, was the cafeteria open? What did you do for lunch?
When I first hired in, they had a little cafeteria set up in the main cafeteria that whatever production was left over from production, they put in there for us. And they had a lady, Cheryl Traer, that ran that for us and everything. So we had a hot meal then. And then they had our wagons that come around on break times with snacks and pop and whatnot on it, so we was able to get stuff off that. But as time went on, they did away with that and put in vending machines, so that was about all we had to get our lunch out of if we didn't bring something in for ourselves.
So now, Mike, just back up. So now, first of all, what was wagon, and they had wagons for you on third shift?
Well, production-wise, because their last wagon come around about our break time.
Oh.
And a wagon was a little cart they had. They had trays on them with ice and pop in them and Twinkies, cupcakes, that type of thing, on it, chips, whatever mm-hmm. you might want for a snack. And they come around different times of the night. And then the morning one, about time we go home, so in the morning one would come out for production.
And so for your lunchtime, for a period of time, you had a small cafeteria that you ate whatever was on the menu for that day from the cafeteria. And now, do I understand you right, where that went away and you guys just had vending machines?
Yeah, eventually that went away. They closed it down. And they tried keeping the main cafeteria open for production up until 1 o'clock, so third shift could at least get up there and try to get a burger or something. And I guess the response from third shift people were so low, they ended up closing it up at 11. So we were then put to vending machines if we wanted something to eat.
Or you had to bring your own.
Or bring our own lunch in.
Oh. So now, were you able to get a longer lunch hour if you had to bring your own in, or was it the same?
No, it was the same. 3 to 3:30 was our lunch break.
Okay. Now, you went in from booth cleaning to oilers, and you initially hired in what year?
1972.
In 72. So at that time, that's when both lines were still together. How did or did it not affect you having the lines change when they went from being both on the same floor to separate floors? Did that change your job? How did it affect what you did?
About the only way it changed is we just had to do more walking. And then that's when they brought more guys into our group, so they split us up, and so many guys did one line, and so many guys did the other line, mm-hmm. everything, but we just did a lot more walking then. Mm-hmm.
And supervisors, you said that some of them didn't know what you did. A couple of things. What made a good supervisor? What made a bad supervisor for you? And how did it change as we got closer to the end of our time there?
A good supervisor was one that says or told me they knew I did my work, and they trusted me as doing it, and just told me to go out on my own because they knew it'd get done. A bad supervisor to me was one that some of the other guys might be screwing off not doing their work, let them get away with it, and then I would have to go back, or me or some of the other guys, and do their job to keep the line running. And that's happened on more than one occasion, sad to say.
So, how has the supervisory techniques changed? Are they pretty much the same standard?
I'd say they're pretty much the same. Because some of them get in there and know what the boss likes or whatever, and talks to them, sports or whatever they might be interested in, and gets in buddy-buddy with them, and gets away with a lot more than some of us do.
Don, I want to talk to you about, we're talking third shift here. The wages, when you hired in, the wages that you made, shift premium, and hours. You did an awful lot of hours. Talk about that. Could you talk about that first?
Yeah, when I hired in 72, my base rate was $5.25 an hour, I believe. I still have my paycheck stub at home.
Really?
And shift premium, on third shift we got 10% shift premium, and second shift we got 5%. And hours, back then, we did a lot of 6 days and a few 7 days. And then change over time, we did 7 days straight through, however long it might be. And at one point, when we had the 4 months shut down, I worked 68 days straight without a day off. And I was finally sitting in the parking lot waiting to go in, and one of my friends come up and looked, said, "Get the heck out of here, go home." So I says, "Okay," pulled my finger and says, "Okay, I'm gone." And I went home, took a night off, and I called my boss to let him know I wasn't coming in. He says, "I wondered when he was finally going to take a day off."
So you went from 525 in 72 to what is it now?
I believe it's 27 something an hour right now.
At the height, like you said, you did 68 hours straight. But at the height of what you would consider wages and earnings, what was the most that you ever made in 1 year of fishing body?
I believe it was about $78,000. And I had taken my vacation time that year and everything, too.
That was with vacations that you made?
Yeah, taking time off for vacations and stuff.
So what would be one of your best bargained benefits that the UAW bargained for you, other than obviously wages? What would be one of
them? I believe health care, prescription coverage, eye coverage, that type of thing, dental. Because I see a lot of people when I go to get a prescription and stuff forking out $200-$300 for one or two prescriptions, and I'm paying $10 for them. That really makes you wake up and appreciate that benefit is being negotiated for us.
Mm-hmm. Do you view your co-workers as your brothers and sisters?
For the most part, yeah, because we all get along really good and everything. And I do view them that way. They're like part of my family.
Any particular long-lasting relationships or friendships that you've taken outside of the plant since you worked there?
Yeah, I had my friend Carol Cooper. We met in early 80s, and she's my best friend right now, so we've known each other about 25 years. And a couple of the booth cleaners I've worked with, early on I met them, and we're still friends 25, 30 years later. Hang out and do a lot together.
Is there any groups of people that you particularly hang with other than the Oilers or inside of the Oilers or that may play instruments, do Bible studies, or any kind of focus group activity inside of them?
No, I never, being on third shift, we really didn't have a lot of that. I went around and talked to a lot of production people, but none of the ones I knew on production were really involved in anything like that that I got into.
Okay. We had a smoking policy or a ban on smoking inside of the plant, and then they went to these little rooms or whatnot. If you are or are not a smoker, did it have any impact on you?
Well, I'm not a smoker, so that aspect didn't really affect me, but I think it was unfair that they banned it in the plant because of the people that did smoke. I feel they have the right to do it. But at the same time, when they banned it, I thought it was kind of ironic because they had all the smoke coming from the well guns and robots in body shop. And to me, that would be more hazardous to your health than what smoke from cigarettes and stuff would be.
Have you ever participated within your local union?
A few times, yeah.
Would you like to elaborate on some of the things you've done?
Well, I went to worked at the union picnic a couple times and gone to meetings here and there and stuff. Again, working third shift, it was hard to get the time schedule straight with the times they had stuff scheduled and stuff for my sleeping and whatnot.
Do you vote for your leadership?
Yes, I do. I vote every election.
Let's see. How about your TAP? You know, TAP is a tuition assistance program that's offered as a benefit. Have you or any of your family members had an opportunity to use any of it?
Yeah, actually I have. I went to Lansing Community College and took massage therapy classes. So now I'm a massage therapist on the side.
Well, Don, we want to have you elaborate on that, and I'm going to start with Jerry Smith, and we'll go around the room.
I was going to say, when this interview's over, could we get some samples of the massage therapy?
Sure, no problem.
So,
not sure, I'm okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I had nothing. Thank you.
Marilyn?
So you're doing massage therapy now, and that's something that you do as a...
I do it as a side job. It got me into it because one of the ladies that worked for Junior Surratt took classes on it and had been talking to me. And then I'd go up down the line, talk to my friends and stuff, start giving them shoulder rubs and stuff. And they'd come up, you're in the wrong profession. You need to do this. So the closer I got to retirement, I started thinking about possibilities of something I might like to mm-hmm. do afterwards. And so I figured I'd take one class and see if I liked it. So I signed up for it through TAP, Tuition Assistance Program, and took the whole first class, massage class, and just fell in love with it. So I ended up taking 12 classes, I believe it was, of different areas that do with massage therapy.
So now you're certified, you
said. I'm not certified because I felt I wasn't going to do it as a full-time income, so just as a side thing. So I never got my certification on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still do. I've got a good clientele build up.
Oh. Mike Fleming, Dan, that's really a great story to hear that, because most men don't go into that field. And it's one that we could use with all the musculoskeletal injuries and repetitive motion injuries that we get. It's I don't think you'll ever need to look for job security is going to be there. Have you ever participated in any activities outside of the plant? What do you community wise or?
I was doing Meals on Wheels for about 9 years, delivering meals to shut-ins and senior citizens that couldn't get out. And I continued doing it until I got put on day shift when the plant started closing and I wasn't able to anymore. But now I'm also involved in Special Olympics, and actually we're getting ready to leave next Tuesday to go up to Traverse City for Winter Games.
Very good, Dan.
That's awesome.
It is.
So how long have you been with Special Olympics?
A year.
A year?
Yes.
And so what is it that you do with the children?
Right now my job basically consists of being a chaperone for them. I go up, like the Winter Games, we go up and we have to make sure they get to their events on time. And we have 3 athletes in each room, so we got pretty much their guardian for the time that they're up mm-hmm. there. Stuff and take them to their events and take them, make sure they get their dinner or get their meds, whatever they might need.
Now, I know right now you and some of your coworkers are doing something special as far as making some things for some people for next winter, aren't you?
Yes, we are at the Jazz Bank office in DeWitt. We're make crocheting hats and scarves and whatnot, and we're donating them to Rescue Mission. And some of them are being donated to Sparrow Hospital Maternity Ward for newborns. The ladies there got me into it, and I'm popping them out right and left with them now, too.
And what you said right now is you've said some things that about workers, and number one is that they're there for their coworkers and for the community. In working there's some things about your fellow coworkers along with yourself that the people in the community don't know, as far as maybe their education, as far as what they do for outside community.
I believe so. Everybody thinks that I get this thrown at me a lot, that you work at GM, you got an easy job, you make lots of money, that type of thing, but they really don't realize that a lot of them are very high college educated, and a lot of them do community service. We got a lot from the bank in community service right now doing jobs. And even like we hear of someone being injured or something or having a disease or whatnot, we'll take a collection up for them and send to them. A lot of people help out at schools for tutoring and whatnot. And a lot of the public just don't see that part of us.
And a lot of them have taken the crafts and made businesses out of them, so they help their...
Yep.
Mike Fleming, can you remember, or what was your best memory of the Fisher Body plant?
I think the best one I can think of is the togetherness of all the people, making friends and being like one big family. And again, it goes back to someone was in need, everybody would be there to help out in whatever aspect they could. And then again, just the knowledge of being able to see a car develop from pieces of metal into a full-fledged car was amazing to me. and still is today.
What would be considered your worst memory of Fisher?
I believe when the booth cleaners got killed. That will be with me forever.
Marilyn Coulter. You were an oiler and a booth cleaner, and you know, right now we're in the transition to going to the new facility. And Fisher Body, as we all love and know it, is now gone. Even as of yesterday, they took the signs down, which means the building's coming down. Being from Lansing, working there for 34 years, how does that make you feel?
Really sad, because Lansing has always been known as the capital of Oldsmobile. In fact, the last day I was in the plant, I just drove around and was looking at everything, and it actually brought tears to my eyes, because it's been over half of my life I spent in that building. It was really a sad part. It was like part of Lansing history is being torn down. And it's just a hard pill to swallow, as they say. I know it's all part of progress, and we're going into a new facility, state-of-the-art facility, but still, this has been home to me for 34 years. Actually, I think I spent more time in Fisher Body building than I have at my own house over the years. So it's real sad. It's like I'm losing a part of my life. Everything, but it's all part of progress, I guess.
Mike Fleming, Don, is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to speak about?
No, nothing that I can think of offhand.
Well, we want to thank you for coming in and interviewing with us, Don.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Don.